Holden realized with shock were tears. Holden would not have guessed the man was capable of weeping. "Ashford," Bull started, then began a long coughing fit that looked suspiciously like sobbing. When he'd finally stopped, his eyes and mouth were covered with mucus. He pulled a rag out of his pocket and wiped most of it off, then said, "Ashford killed Sam." "What?" Holden asked. His brain refused to believe this could be true. He'd heard the words clearly, but those words could not be, so he must have heard them wrong. "What?" Bull took a long breath, gave his face one last wipe with a rag, then said, "He brought her up to the bridge to ask about the laser mods, and then he shot her. He made Anna Marie Ruiz the chief engineer." "How do you know?" Monica asked. "Because that was Ruiz on the line just now. She wants us to get her the hell out of there," Bo said. Almost all traces of his grief were gone from his face. He took another long, shuddering breath. "She knows Ashford has completely gone around the bend. But what can she do?" Holden shook his head, still refusing to believe it. Brilliant little Sam, who fixed his ship, who was Naomi's best friend, whom Alex and Amos shared a good-natured crush on. That Sam couldn't be dead. Amos was staring at him. The big man's hands were curled into fists, his knuckles a bloodless white. "We have to hold this ground," Holden said, hoping to head off Amos's next words. "I need you to hold it, or this whole thing falls apart." "Then you kill him," Amos said, his words terrifyingly flat and emotionless. "None of this trial bullshit. No righteous man among the savages bullshit. You fucking kill him, or so help me God." Holden felt a sudden nausea almost drive him to his knees. He took a few deep breaths to push it back. This was what they had to offer to Sam's memory. After all she'd done for them. All she'd meant to them. They had violence. Arguments about the best way to get revenge. Sam, who as far as he knew had never hurt another person in her life. Would she want this? He could picture her there, telling Amos and Bull to put their testosterone away and act like adults. The thought almost made him vomit. Monica put a hand on his back. "Are you okay?" "I have to tell Naomi," was all he could say. Then he pushed her hand away and walked across a floor that moved under his feet like the rolling deck of an ocean-going ship. Naomi reacted only with sorrow, not with anger. She cried but didn't demand revenge. She repeated Sam's name through her tears, but didn't say Ashford's once. It seemed like the right reaction. It seemed like love. He was holding Naomi while she gently wept, when Bull clumped up behind him. He felt a flash of anger, but swallowed it. "What?" "Look," Bull said, rubbing his buzz cut with both hands. "I know this is a shitty time, but we have to talk about where we go from here." Holden shrugged. "Sam's gone. She was pretty central to our plans." "I understand," Naomi said. "I'll go." "What?" Holden said, feeling like they were having a conversation in some kind of code he didn't understand. "Go where?" "With Sam gone, Naomi is the best engineer we've got," Bull said. "What about this Ruiz person? I thought she was the chief engineer now." "She was in charge of infrastructure," Bull said. "And I've seen Nagata's background. She's got the training and the experience. And we trust her. If someone's going to take Sam's place..." "No," Holden said without thinking about it. Naomi was hurt. She couldn't fight her way into the engine room now. And Sam had been killed. "I'll go," Naomi repeated. "My arm is for shit, but I can walk. If someone can help me once we get there, I can take out the bridge and shut down the reactor.
No, Holden said again. Yeah, me too, Alex added.
He was sitting on the edge of the gurney, facing away from them. He'd been shaking like he was crying, but hadn't made a sound. His voice sounded dry, like fallen leaves rustling in the wind, brittle and empty.
I guess I have to go too.
Alex, you don't... Naomi started, but he kept talking over the top of her.
Nobody pulled the Rosie's batteries offline when we left, so if we're shutting everything down, she'll need someone to do it.
Bull nodded. Holden wanted to smack him for agreeing with any of this.
And that'll be me, Alex said. I can tag along as far as engineering, grab an EVA pack there, and use the aft airlock to get out.
Amos moved over behind Bull, his face still flat, emotionless, but his hands and fists.
Alex is going?
New plan,
Bull said loud enough for everyone to hear. People stopped whatever they were doing and moved over to listen. More must have arrived, because there were almost 50 in the office now. At the back of the room stood a small knot of people in military uniforms. Anna, the red-headed preacher, was with them. She was holding hands with an aggressively thin woman who alternated smoking and tapping her front teeth with her pinky fingernail. Bull spotted them at the same time Holden did, and waved them forward.
Anna, come on up here, he said. Most everyone is here now, so this is how it's going to go down.
The room got quiet. Anna made her way up to Bull and waited. Her skinny friend came with her, staring at the crowd around the preacher with the suspicious eyes of a bodyguard.
In.
Bull stopped to look at a nearby wall panel with a clock on it.
30 minutes. I will take a team made up of security personnel and the crew of the Rosinante to the southern drum access point. We will retake that access point and gain entrance into the engineering level. Once we control engineering, Monica and her team will begin a broadcast explaining to the rest of the fleet about the need to kill the power. Preacher, that's where you and your people come in.
Anna turned and smiled at her group, a motley collection of people in the uniforms of a variety of services and planetary allegiances, most of them injured in one way or another, some quite badly.
The target for the shutdown is 1900 hours local, about 2.5 hours from now. We need them to keep it down for 2 hours. That's our window. We need the behemoth down during that 2 hours.
We'll make it happen, Naomi said.
But when our broadcast starts, Ashford will probably try to take this location. Amos and the remainder of my team, along with any volunteers from among the rest of you, will hold this position as long as possible. The more bad guys you can tie up here, the fewer we'll have trying to take engineering back from us. But I need you to hold. If we can't keep Anna and her people on the air long enough to get everyone on board with our shutdown plan, this thing ends before it starts.
We'll hold, Amos said.
No one disagreed.
Once we control engineering, we'll send a team forward to put restraints on the hopefully unconscious people on the bridge, and we'll own the ship. The lights go out, the aliens let us go, and we get the fuck out of this miserable stretch of space once and for all. How's that sound?
Bull raised his voice with the final question, looking for a cheer from the group, and the group obliged. People began to drift back toward their various tasks. Holden squeezed Naomi's uninjured shoulder and moved over to Anna. She looked lost. Along the way, he grabbed Amos by the arm.
Anna, Holden said. Do you remember Amos?
She smiled and nodded.
Hello, Amos.
How you doing, Red?
Amos will be here to protect you and the others, Holden continued. If you need anything, you let him know.
I feel safe in saying nothing will get in here to stop you from doing your job as long as he's alive.
That's the truth, Amos said.
Ma'am?
Hey, guys, someone called out from the doorway. Look what followed me home. Can I keep them? Holden patted Anna on the arm and gave Amos a meaningful look.
Protect this one with your life.
Amos nodded back. He looked vaguely offended. He left them together and caught up with Bull heading for the door. The security officer, Corin, Bull's new second-in-command, was leaning next to the door with a shit-eating grin.
Come on in, boys, she said,
and four Martians with military haircuts came into the room. They stood on the balls of their feet, slowly looking over every inch of the room. Holden had known someone who always entered a room that way. Bobby. He found himself wishing she were here. The man in the lead was powerfully familiar.
Sergeant Vrabinsky, Bull said to one of them. This is a surprise.
Holden hadn't recognized the man without his armor. He looked big.
Sir, Vrabinsky said,
I heard you're about to start a fight to get us all out of here.
Yeah, Bull said. I am.
Sounds like a noble cause, Vrabinsky replied. Need four grunts with nothing else to do?
Yeah, Bull said with a growing smile. I really do.
Chapter 44. Anna. They'd failed. Anna watched the busy men and women in the radio offices as they strapped on body armor, loaded weapons, hung grenades from their belts, and she felt only sadness and despair. A history professor at university had once told her, "Violence is what people do when they run out of good ideas. It's attractive because it's simple. It's direct. It's almost always available as an option. When you can't think of a good rebuttal for your opponent's argument, you can always punch them in the face." They'd run out of ideas, and now they were reaching for the simple, direct, always available option of shooting everyone they disagreed with. She hated it. Monica caught her eye from across the room and held up a small thermos of coffee in invitation. Anna waved her off with a smile.
Are you insane? Tilly asked.
She was sitting on the floor next to her in a back corner of the offices, trying to stay out of everyone's way.
That woman has the only decent coffee on this entire ship.
She waved at Monica, pointing at herself. I should have spent more time talking to Cortez, Anna said. The OPA captain might be intractable, but I could have reached Cortez with enough time. Life is finite, dear, and Cortez is an asshole. We'll all be better off if someone puts a bullet in him before this is over. Tilly accepted a pour of Monica's coffee with a grateful smile. Monica set the thermos down and sat on the floor next to them.
Hey, we... she started, but Anna didn't notice.
You don't mean that, Anna said to Tilly, annoyance creeping into her voice. Cortez isn't a bad person. He's frightened and unsure, and has made some bad choices. But at worst, he's misguided, not evil.
He doesn't deserve your sympathy, Tilly said, then tossed back the last of her coffee like she was angry with it.
Who are we?
Monica started again.
He does. He does deserve it, Anna said.
Watching the young men and women prepare for war, preparing to kill and be killed right in front of her, made her more angry with Tilly than she probably would have been otherwise. But she found herself very angry now.
That's exactly the point. They all deserve our sympathy. If Bull's right about Ashford, and he's gone crazy with fear and humiliation and the trauma of seeing his crew killed, then he deserves our sympathy. That's a terrible place to be. Cortez deserves our understanding, because he's doing exactly the same thing we are, trying to find the right thing to do in an impossible situation.
Oh, Monica said, Cortez.
That's a load of crap, Annie.
That's exactly how you know who the good guys and the bad guys are, by what they do when the chips are down.
This isn't about good guys and bad guys, Anna said. Yes, we've picked sides now because some of the actions they're about to take will have serious consequences for us, and we're going to try to stop them. But what you're doing is demonizing them, making them the enemy. The problem with that is that once we've stopped them, and they can't hurt us anymore, they're still demons, still the enemy.
Believe me, Tilly said, when I get out of here, it will be my mission in life to burn Cortez to the ground for this.
Why? What do you mean, why?
He won't be on a ship trying to destroy the ring anymore. He won't be supporting Ashford anymore. All of the circumstances that made him your enemy will be gone. What's the value in clinging to the hate?
Tilly turned away and fumbled around in her pocket for her cigarettes. She smoked one aggressively, pointedly not looking at Anna.
What's the answer then? Monica asked after a few tense moments of silence.
I don't know, Anna said, pulling her legs close and resting her chin on her knees. She tucked her back as far into the corner of the room as it would go, her body looking for a safe place with a small child's insistence. But the hard green walls offered no comfort.
So, it's all just academic then, Monica said. Tilly snorted in agreement, still not looking at Anna.
Anna pointed at the people getting ready in the room around them. How many will be dead by the end of today?
There's no way to know, Monica said.
We owe it to them to look for other answers. We failed this time. We've run out of ideas, and now we're reaching for the gun. But maybe next time, if we've thought about what led us here, maybe next time we find a different answer. Certainty doesn't have a place in violence.
For a while they were silent. Tilly angrily chain-smoked. Monica typed furiously on her terminal. Anna watched the others get ready for war and tried to match faces with names. Even if they won out today, there was a very good chance she'd be presiding over more than one funeral tomorrow.
Bull clunked over to them, his walking machine whining to a stop. He had deteriorated during the few hours they'd spent in the office. He was coughing less, but he'd begun using his inhaler a lot more often. Even the machine seemed ill now, its sounds harsher, its movements jerkier, as though the walker and bull had merged into one being, and it was dying along with him.
Everything okay? He asked.
Fine, Anna said. She considered telling him he needed rest, then abandoned the idea. She didn't need to lose another argument just then.
So, we're getting pretty close to 0 hour here, Bull said, then stifled a wet-sounding cough. You have everything you need?
No, Anna thought. I need an answer that doesn't include what you're about to do.
Yes, she said instead. Monica has been making notes for the broadcast. I've compiled a list of all the ships we have representatives from. We're missing a few, but I'm hoping Planetary Allegiance will be enough to get their cooperation. Chris Williams, a junior officer from the Prince, has been a big help on that.
You?
Bull asked, jabbing a thick hand toward Monica. My team is ready to go, she said. I'm a bit worried about getting the full broadcast out before Ashford's people stop us. Bull laughed. It was a wet, unpleasant sound.
Hold on.
He called out to Jim Holden, who was busy reassembling a stripped-down rifle of some sort and chatting with one of the Martian Marines. Holden put the partly assembled rifle on a table and walked over.
What's up? These people need reassurance that they're being protected long enough to finish their broadcast, Bull said.
Holden blinked twice, once at Bull, once at the three women sitting cross-legged on the floor. Anna had to suppress a giggle. Holden was so comically earnest, she just wanted to give him a hug and pat him on the head.
Amos will make sure you're not interrupted,
he finally said.
Right, Bo said. Tell them why that's reassuring.
Oh, well, when Amos is angry, he's the meanest, scariest person I've ever met. And he'd walk across a sea of corpses he personally created to help a friend. And one of his good friends just got murdered by the people who are going to be trying to take this office.
I heard about that, Anna said. I'm sorry.
Yes, Holden said. And the last people in the galaxy I'd want to be are the ones that are going to try and break in here to stop you. Amos doesn't process grief well. It usually turns into anger or violence for him. I have a feeling he's about to process the shit out of it on some Ashford loyalists. Killing people won't make him feel better, Anna said, regretting the words the second they left her mouth. These people were going to be risking their lives to protect her. They didn't need her moralizing at them. Actually, Holden said with a half smile, I think it might be for him. But Amos is a special case. You'd be right about almost anyone else. Anna looked across the room at Amos. He was sitting quietly by the front door to the broadcast office, some sort of very large rifle laid across his knees. He was a large man, tall and thick across the shoulders and chest. But with his round, shaved head and broad face, he didn't look like a killer to Anna. He looked like a friendly repairman, the kind who showed up to fix broken plumbing or swap out the air recycling filters. According to Holden, he would kill without remorse to protect her. She imagined trying to explain their current situation to Nono. I've fallen in with killers, you see, but it's okay because they are the right killers, the good guy killers. They don't shoot innocent chief engineers. They shoot the people who do. Monica was asking Holden something. When he started to answer, Anna got up and left with an apology to everyone and no one. She dodged through the crowded office, smiling and patting people on the arm as she passed, distributing general reassurance to everyone around her. It was all she had to offer them. She pulled an unused chair over next to Amos and sat down.
Red, he said, giving her a tiny nod.
I'm sorry. She put her hand on his arm. He stared down at it as though he couldn't figure out what it was.
Okay, he said,
not asking the obvious question, not pretending not to understand. Anna found herself liking him immediately.
Thank you for doing this.
Amos shifted in his chair to face her.
You don't need to.
In a few hours, we might all be dead, she said. I want you to know that I know what you're doing, and I know why, and I don't care about any of that. Thank you for helping us.
God damn, Red, Amos said, putting his hand on hers. You must be hell on wheels as a preacher. You're making me feel the best and worst I've felt in a while at the same time.
That's all I wanted to say, Anna said, then patted his hand once and stood up.
Before she could leave, Amos grabbed her hand in an almost painfully tight grip.
No one's gonna hurt you today.
There was no boast in it. It was a simple statement of fact. She gave him a smile and pulled her hand away. Good-hearted, unrepentant killers were not something she'd had to fit into her worldview before this, and she wasn't sure how it would work. But now she'd have to try.
All right, people, listen up, Bull yelled out over the noise.
The room fell silent.
It's 0 hour. Let's get the action teams divided up and ready to go.
A shadow fell across Anna. Amos was standing behind her, clutching his large gun.
Defense, he called out. To me.
A group of maybe 2 dozen extricated themselves from the general crowd and moved over to Amos. Anna found herself surrounded by heavily armed and armored belters with a few inner planet types mixed in. She was not a tall woman, and it felt like being at the bottom of a well. Excuse me, she said, but no one heard her. A strong hand gripped her arm, pulled her through the knot of people, and deposited her outside of it. Amos gave her a smile and said,
"Might want to find a quiet corner, Red."
Anna thought about trying to cross the room back to Tilly and Monica, but there were too many people in the way. Amos had a sort of personal field that kept anyone from standing too close to him. So Anna just stayed inside it to keep from getting trampled on. Amos didn't appear to mind.
"Assault team," Holden called out. "To me."
Soon he had a group of 24 around him, including Naomi and Alex from the Rocinante, the 4 Martian Marines, a bunch of Bull security people, and Bull himself. The only people in the group without obvious physical injuries were the 4 Marines. Alex and Naomi looked especially bad. Naomi's shoulder was bound tight in a harness that immobilized it and her arm, and she winced every time she took a step. Alex's face was swollen so badly that his left eye was almost completely closed. Blood spotted the bandages around his head. These are the people who helped stop Protogen, who fought the monsters around Ganymede, she told herself. They're tough. They'll make it. It sounded thin, even in her own head.
"Well," Bull said.
The crowd seemed to be waiting for last words from him.
"I guess this is it. Good hunting, everyone."
A few people clapped or called out to him. Most didn't. Across the room, Monica was talking to her camera people. Anna knew she should join them, but found herself not wanting to. All these people would be risking their lives to buy her time. Her. So it was all on her whether the whole plan succeeded or failed. If she couldn't convince an entire flotilla of ships from 3 separate governments that turning off their power for a couple hours was the right thing to do, then it would all be for nothing. She found herself wanting to delay that moment as long as possible, to keep it from being her responsibility as long as she could.
"Better go, Ren," Amos whispered to her.
"What if they're all too scared to shut down their ships?" she replied. "We're in the haunted house, and I'm about to tell everyone that the way to escape is to turn out all the lights. I would find that unconvincing in their shoes."
Amos nodded thoughtfully. Anna waited for the words of encouragement.
"Yeah," he finally said. "That'll be a bitch. My job's a lot easier. Good luck."
Somehow, the honesty and not even trying to sugarcoat it cracked the last of Anna's fear, and she found herself laughing. Before she could reconsider, she grabbed Amos around the middle and gave him a squeeze. "Again," she said, letting him go after a few seconds. "Thank you. I was being a big scaredy cat. You're a good person, Amos."
"Nah, I'm not. I just hang with good company. Get going, Red. I gotta get my game face on."
The assault team was heading for the door, and Anna moved to the wall to let them by. Holden stopped next to Amos and said,
"Be here when I get back, big man."
Amos shook his hand and slapped him on the back once. Holden's face was filled with worry. Anna had a sudden vision of her future, sending Nami off to school one day, being terrified that she wouldn't be there to look after her, and having to let her go anyway.
"Keep Naomi and Alex safe," Amos said, pushing Holden toward the door.
From Anna's position, she could see the worry lines on Holden's face only deepen at that. He was going to have to let them go, too. Even if they all survived the assault on engineering, Alex would be leaving the ship to fly to the Rocinante, and Naomi would be left behind to keep the power shut down while Holden continued on toward the bridge. Anna knew the little crew had been together for several years now. She wondered if they'd ever had to split up and fight like this before. Holden's face seemed to be saying they hadn't. Anna was watching them file out the door, again trying to memorize faces and names, trying not to think about why.
Monica grabbed her and started pulling her toward the makeshift film studio. "Time to start working," she said. She deposited Anna just outside the camera view and stepped in front of the unadorned green wall they used as a backdrop. "Welcome," she said, her face and voice shifting into cheery video host mode. "I'm Monica Stewart in the offices of Radio Free Slow Zone. I've got some exciting guests today, including Dr. Anna Volovodov and a number of UN and Martian military officers. But even more exciting, today we're bringing you the most important broadcast we've ever done. Today, we'll tell you how to go home." Chapter 45. Bull. Bull felt the time moving past like it was something physical, like he was falling through it and couldn't catch himself. Anna Marie Ruiz had an hour left before she had to decide whether to do what Ashford wanted or get killed. If she didn't have to choose, she wouldn't choose wrong. And every minute that he wasn't in the engineering deck took them closer to where they couldn't get back. They'd left the colonial administration offices in a small convoy, 6 electric carts with 25 people, including Jim Holden and 3/4 of his crew, the 4 Martian Marines, an even dozen of the Behemoth's crew who'd stayed loyal to Pa, and 5 Earth soldiers, whom Corin had found in the drum and brought along. They had some riot armor that hadn't been taken out of the armory before Ashford's forces occupied it. They had an ugly collection of slug-throwing pistols and shotguns loaded with ballistic gel rounds, a mix of weapons designed to subdue without permanent injury, and those meant to assure the enemy's death. The 4 Martian Marines had the 4 best guns they'd been able to scrounge up, but there were too few of both. The whole thing stank of improvisation. He couldn't sit down, so he'd taken the canopy off the electric cart and wedged his mech in the back. He sailed through the hot, close air of the drum like a figurehead on the prow of some doomed pirate ship. Corin was at the wheel, hunched over it like she could make it go faster by the raw act of will. The Martian Sergeant Verbinski, who'd brought Jim Holden to the Behemoth in restraints, sat at her side, looking focused and bemused at the same time. They passed through the main corridors, heading south. The tires made a loud ripping sound against the decking. High above, the long, thin strip of blinding white illuminated the curve of the drum. The southern transfer point loomed ahead of them like a ceramic steel cliff face. People parted before them, making a path. Bull watched them as he passed, anger and fear and curiosity. These were his people. They hadn't all been to start with, but he'd brought them here to the Behemoth. He'd made the ship important, and the OPA's role in the exploration beyond the ring central. Earthers and Martians and Belters, the ones who'd lived. As the faces turned toward him, watching the convoy pass like flowers back on Earth tracking the arc of the sun, he wondered what Fred Johnson would have thought of all this. It was a clusterfuck from start to finish, no question about that. He hoped that when it came time to settle up accounts, he'd done more good than harm. "We're a pretty compromised force," Verbinski said, craning his neck back and up to look at Bull. "How many people you think we're going up against?" "Not sure," Bull said. "Probably a little more than we got. But they're divided between engineering and command." "They're as banged up as we are?" Bull glanced over his shoulder. The truth was, at least half of the people he was about to take into battle were already injured. There were people with pressure casts holding their arms together, with sutures keeping their skin closed. In normal circumstances, half his force would still be in the infirmary. Hell, he didn't have any damn business going into a fire zone either. Except that he wasn't going to stay back
and send people into a meat grinder he wouldn't step into himself.
Just about,
Bull said.
You know, if I still had that recon armor you took off of us, I could just go get this done. Not even me and my squad, just me.
Yeah, I know that.
Kind of makes you wish you'd trusted me a little bit, doesn't it?
Kind of does, Bull said. There were two ways to reach the transfer point. The elevator was big enough to fit half the force into a box small enough that when the doors opened at the top, a single grenade would incapacitate nearly all of them. The alternative was a wide, sloping ramp that rose from the floor of the drum and spun up in a tight spiral to the axis. Its curve was going into the drum's spin, so the faster they drove up it, the more the cart tires would push down into the floor. That wouldn't matter down here, but when they reached the top where the fighting would essentially be in free fall, every bit of stability and control they could glean would matter. The first shots came down from the axis, spraying bits of the ceramic roadway up in front of the lead cart. Bull tried to bend his head back far enough to see whether the attack was coming from the transfer point itself or a barricade closer in.
Juarez, Verbinski shouted. Cover us.
Yes, sir,
a voice called from one of the back carts. Bull swiveled the mech enough to look over his shoulder. On the third cart back, one of the Martian Marines was lying on his back, a long scoped rifle pointing up. He looked like he was napping until the rifle fired once. Bull tried to look up again, but the mech prevented him. He took out his hand terminal and used its camera like a mirror. High above them, a body was floating in the null G-zone, a pink cloud of blood forming around its waist.
One less, Verbinski said.
The firing continued as they took the ramp at speed. The semi-adhesive ripping of the tires against the deck changed its tone as less and less weight pressed against them. Bull felt his body growing lighter in its brace. The edge of the ramp was a cliff now, looking down almost a third of a kilometer to the floor of the drum below. Ashford's men were above them, but not so far now that Bull couldn't see the metal barricades they'd welded to the walls and deck. He was painfully aware of being the highest target. His neck itched. Two heads popped up from behind the barricades. The muzzle flashes were like sparks. The Martian's rifle barked behind him, and one of the attackers slumped down, the other retreating.
Okay, Bull said. This is as close as we get without cover.
Corin spun the cart nose into the wall and slipped out, taking cover with Verbinski behind it, while the next cart came ahead, mirroring her. They were in microgravity here, maybe a tenth of a G, maybe less. Bull had to turn the magnets on in his mech's feet to keep from floating away. By the time he'd gotten off the cart, the fighting was already far ahead of him. He drove the mech forward, marching up past the improvised barricades of the carts. The closest of them was less than 10 meters from the first of Ashford's barricades, and Jim Holden, Corin, and one of the Earthers were already pressed against the enemy's cover, ducking to the side, firing and falling back. The smell of spent gunpowder soured the air.
"Where's Naomi?" Bull shouted.
He didn't have a clear idea whether any of the technical staff in there besides Ruiz were still loyal to Pa, and if they got their only real engineer killed before they made it into engineering, he was going to be pissed. Something detonated behind the barrier, and two bodies pinwheeled out into the empty air. The light was behind them, and he couldn't tell if they were his people or Ashford's. At the last of the carts, he stopped. The battle was well ahead of him now, almost at the transfer point itself. That was good. It meant they were winning. A thin man was still at the cart's wheel. At a guess, he was in his early 20s, brown skin and close-cropped hair. The hole in his chest
had already stopped bleeding, and his eyes were empty. Bull felt a moment's regret and pushed it away. He'd known. They'd all known. Not just coming to this fight, but when they'd put their boots on the behemoth and headed out past the farthest human habitation, they'd known they might not make it back. Maybe they'd even known that the thing that killed them might not be the ring, but the people who'd gone out alongside them. People like Ashford. People like him. "Sorry, Esse," Bull said, and drove the joysticks forward. Ashford's forces were pulling back. There was no question about it now. Verbinski and his team were laying down a withering and professional spray of gunfire. The sniper, Juarez, didn't fire often, but when he did, it was always a kill shot. The combination of constant automatic weapons fire and the occasional but lethal bark of Juarez's rifle kept moving the enemy back in toward the transfer point like they were boxing in the queen on a chessboard. Even the most powerful of Ashford's guns couldn't find a safe angle on them, and Verbinski kept the pressure on, pushing back and back and back until Ashford's people broke, running. The transfer point itself was a short hallway with emergency decompression doors at each end. As Bull watched, the vast, red-painted circular hatches groaned and began rolling into place. They wouldn't be enough to stop Bull and his people, but they'd slow things down. Maybe too much.
"Charge!"
Bull shouted, then fell into a fit of coughing that was hard to stop. When he could, he croaked,
"Come on, you bastards, get in there before they lock us out."
They launched through the air, guns blazing. The noise was deafening, and Bull could only imagine what it would sound like from farther away. Distant thunder in a land that had never known rain. He pushed his mech forward, magnetic boots clamping and releasing as the doors rolled their way nearer to closed. He was the last one into the corridor. At the far end, the air was a cloud of smoke and blood. The farther door was almost closed, but at the side, Naomi Nagata was elbow deep in an access panel, Holden at her back with assault rifle in hand. As Bull approached, the woman pulled something free. A stream of black droplets geysered out into the empty space of the corridor, and the sharp smell of hydraulic fluid cut through the air. The door stopped closing. In the chaos, it was hard to say, but at a guess, Bull thought he still had between 15 and 20 people standing. It wasn't great, but it could have been worse. Once they got into engineering, things would open up again. There would be cover. The few meters beyond the second door, though, would be a kill zone. It was the space all his people had to go through to get anyplace else. If Ashford's people had any tactical sense at all, they'd be there, waiting for the first sign of movement. It was a standoff, and he was going to have to be the one to break it. Verbinski skimmed by, as comfortable weightless as a fish in water. He turned, tapped his feet against the wall, and came to something close to a dead stop.
"Going to be a bear making it through there," the Martian said. "I was just thinking that," Bull said.
Verbinski looked at the half-closed door like a carpenter sizing up a board.
"Be nice if we had some explosives," he said. "Something to clear the area a little. Give us some breathing room." "You're trying to tell me something, Sergeant?"
Verbinski shrugged and took a thin black cassette out of his pocket. Bull hoisted his eyebrows.
"Concussion?" he said.
2,000 kilojoules. We call them spine crackers."
"You smuggled arms onto my ship, Sergeant?"
"Just felt a little naked without him."
"I'll overlook it this time," Bull said and raised his hands, rallying the troops to him.
They took cover behind the half-closed door. Verbinski crawled out onto the surface and peeked over the side, out and back fast as a lizard's tongue.
Half a dozen bullets split the air where his head had been. The Martian floated in the air, his legs in lotus position, as he armed the little black grenade. Bull waited, Holden and Corin at his side.
Just to check, Holden said, we're throwing grenades into the place that controls the reactor?
We are, Bull said.
So, the worst-case scenario?
Worst-case scenario is we lose, and Ashford kills the solar system, Bull said. Losing containment on the reactor, and we all die, is actually second worst.
Never a sign things have gone well, Holden said. Verbinski held up a fist, and everyone in the group put their hands over their ears. Verbinski did something sharp with his fingers and flicked the black cassette through the gap between the door and its frame. The detonation came almost at once. Bull felt like he'd been dropped into the bottom of a swimming pool. His vision pulsed in time with his heart, but he pushed the joysticks forward. His ears rang, and he felt his consciousness starting to slip a little. As he maneuvered his mech through the space into engineering, it occurred to him that he was going to be lucky if he didn't pass out during the fight. He had a broken spine, and his lungs were half full of crap. No one would have thought less of him if he'd stayed behind, except he didn't care what people thought about him. It was Ashford who cared about that. The fight on the other side was short. The grenade had been much worse for the defenders. Half of the soldiers had dropped their weapons before all of Bull's people made it in. Only Garza had held out, holding the long corridor between main engineering and the communications array board until Corin had stepped into the space and shot him in the bridge of the nose, doing with a pistol what would have been a difficult shot with a scoped rifle. They took half a dozen of Ashford's men alive, the prisoners zip-tied to handholds in the bulkheads. None of them had been Bull's. They found Ruiz under a machining table, curled with her arms around her knees. When she came out, her skin had a gray cast to it, and her hands were trembling. Naomi moved around her, shifting from a display panel to the readouts on the different bits of equipment, checking what was being reported in one place against what it said elsewhere. Holden hovered behind her, like the tail of a kite.
Anna Marie, Bull said. You all right?
Ruiz nodded.
Thank you, she said, and then before she could say anything else, Naomi sloped in, stopping herself against the desk.
Was this where Sam was working? She asked. Ruiz looked at her for a moment, uncomprehending. When she nodded, it seemed almost tentative.
What are you seeing? Bull said. Can you shut it down?
If you just want to drop the core, I can probably do that, Naomi said. But I don't know if I can get her started again. And there are some folks on the ship who might want to keep breathing. Controlled shutdown would be better.
Bull smiled.
We need to shut everything down, Holden said. The reactor, the power grid, everything.
I know, honey, Naomi said, and Holden looked chagrined.
Sorry. In one of the far corners of the deck, someone yelped. Corin came gliding across the open space, serenely holding in a choke an earther Bull didn't recognize. It occurred to him that she might be having too much fun with this part. Might not be healthy.
I don't know what Sam put in place to sabotage the comm laser, Naomi said. I have to do an audit before I can undo any of it. And without...
Naomi stopped. Her jaw slid forward. She cleared her throat, swallowed.
Without Sam, it's going to be harder. This was her ship.
Can you just take the laser offline? Bull asked.
Sure, Naomi said, as long as no one's shooting at me while I'm doing it.
And how about turning up the nitrogen in the command enough that everyone up there takes a little nap?
I can help with that, Ruiz said. Her voice sounded a little stronger.
All right, Bull said. Here's what we're doing.
Nagata's in charge of engineering. Anything she says, you do.
Ruiz nodded, too numb to protest.
Your first priority is getting the laser offline so none of those pendejos in control can fire it. Your second priority is to tweak the environmental controls on the command deck. Your third priority is to shut down the ship so we can bring it back up. See if Mr. Holden's ghost is going to keep its promises.
Sir, Naomi said.
Corin!
Bo shouted. The coughing stopped him for a moment. It still wasn't violent, and it didn't bring anything up. He didn't know if that was a good sign or a bad one.
Corin launched herself to the control board. You and Holden head up to the external elevator shaft with a handful of zip ties. When everyone up there's asleep, you two make sure they don't get confused and hurt themselves.
Corin's smile was cold. Might be that Ashford wasn't a problem he'd have to solve. Bull tried to bring himself to care one way or the other, but his body felt like he'd been awake for a week.
Why am I doing that? Holden asked. To keep you out of her way, Bull said. We'll keep your exo safe. We need her.
He could see Holden's objections gathering like a storm, but Naomi stopped them. It's okay. And that seemed to be that.
Alex is going to the Rossi to shut down whatever we left on, Holden said, shrugging. I'll help him with the EVA suit before I go.
Okay,
Bull said gravely. He was willing to pretend they'd struck some kind of compromise, if that helped. He heard the sound of men laughing and recognized the timbre of Sergeant Verbinski's voice.
Excuse me.
The mech clanked across the deck, magnetic locks clinging and releasing. The others all floated freely in the air, but with three quarters of his body dead and numb, Bull knew he wouldn't be able to maneuver. It was like he was the only one still constrained by gravity. Verbinski and his squad were in an alcove near the supply shop. One of the Marines had been shot in the elbow. His forearm was a complication of bone and meat. But he was laughing and talking while the others dressed the wound. Bull wondered how much they'd doped him. He caught Verbinski's gaze and nodded him closer.
You and your people, Bull said when they were out of earshot. You did good work back there.
Thank you, Verbinski said. The pride showed right through the humble.
We do what we can.
If we had our suits, now,
thing is, Bull said. Those grenades? How many of them you still have on you?
Half a dozen, Verbinski said.
Yeah, Bull sighed. Nothing personal, but I'm going to need to confiscate those.
Verbinski looked shocked for a moment. Then he laughed.
Always the hard ass, he said.
Chapter 46 Clarissa.
What's going on, Jojo?
I think we've got a problem, sir. Take a look.
Monica Stewart appeared on the monitors, her professionally calm face like a being from a different reality. Today, she said, her hands folded in her lap and a twinkle in her eye, we'll tell you how to go home.
What the fuck?
Ashford shouted, dashing his hand across the display.
What is this?
They're making a new broadcast, sir,
the security man said. Clarissa watched Ashford turn and stare at him, watched the man shrivel under the weight of his gaze.
Exclusive to Radio Free Slow Zone, Monica said. We have reason to believe that if we in the United Human Fleet can reduce our energy output low enough to no longer appear threatening.
Shut her down. Ashford said. Call everyone that's still in the drum and shut that feed off. Get me Ruiz. I want power cut to that whole section if we have to.
Is this something we need to concern ourselves with? Cortez asked.
His voice had an overtone of whining.
What they do or say can't matter now, can it?
This is my ship, Ashford shouted. I'm in control.
Once we've destroyed the ring, though... Clarissa put a hand on Cortez's shoulder and shook her head once. He's the father, she said. The ship is his house.
Thank you, Ashford said to her, but with his eyes still on Cortez. I'm glad that someone here understands how this works. Suppression team is dispatched, Jojo said. You want me to pull from the guards' units, too? Whatever it takes, Ashford said. I want you to get it done.
On the screen, the view shifted, and Anna's face filled the screen. Her hair was pulled back, and someone had given her makeup in a way that made her look like everyone else in broadcast. Clarissa felt a strange tug in her chest, resentment and alarm. Get out of there, she thought at the screen. God's not going to stop bullets for you. The idea, Anna said, is that the station has identified us as an ongoing threat. Its actions toward us have been based in a kind of fear, or, that's wrong, a caution. We are as unknown and unpredictable to it as it is to us. And so we have reason to believe that if we appear to be less threatening, it may relax its constraints. The camera cut back to Monica Stewart, nodding and looking sober. All the physical cues that would indicate Anna was a serious woman with important opinions. And what is your plan, exactly? Monica asked. Anna's laughter bubbled. I wouldn't call the plan mine. What we're thinking is that if we power down the reactors in all the ships and reduce energy being used, the station can be induced to, well, to see us less as a threat and more as a curiosity. I mean, see this all from its perspective. A gate opened, and whatever it had been expecting to come through, instead there came a ship running ballistic at tremendous speed. Then a flotilla of new ships behind that, and armed soldiers who went aboard the station itself with weapons firing. If something came to us that way, we'd call it an invasion. And so, by giving some indication that we aren't escalating the attack, we give whatever we're dealing with here the opportunity to not escalate against us, Anna said. We've been thinking of the protomolecule and all the things that came from it as... The screen went dark. Ashford scowled at his control boards, calling up and dismissing information with hard percussive taps. Cortez floated beside Clarissa, frowning, humiliated. He had engineered Ashford's escape and reconquest of the behemoth, and she could see in the older man's eyes that it wasn't what he'd expected it to be. She wondered if her own father had that same expression in his cell back on Earth, or wherever it was they'd put him. Ruiz, Ashford snapped. Report, what's our status? I still have half an hour, sir, the woman said through the connection. I didn't ask how much time you had left, the captain said. I asked for a report. The conductant is in place and curing, the woman said. It looks like it'll be done on time. I found a place in the breaker system that Sam put in a power cutout. You've replaced that? I did, but I don't know if there are others. She could have sabotaged the whole circuit. Well, Ashford said, you have half an hour to check it. That's what I'm doing, sir. Ashford tapped the control panel again. Clarissa found herself wishing he'd put the news feed back on. She wanted to know what Anna was saying, even if it was only as a way to pass the time. The air on the bridge wasn't as hot and close as it had been in the drum, but the coolness wasn't comforting. If anything, it seemed to underscore the time they'd been waiting. Her belly was beginning to complain with hunger, and she had to imagine that the others were feeling the same. They were holding the bridge of the largest spacecraft humanity had ever built, trapped in the starless dark by an alien power they barely began to comprehend, but they were still constrained by the petty needs of flesh, and their collective blood sugar was getting pretty low. She wondered what it said about her that she'd watched a woman shot to death not 2 hours before, and all she could think about now was lunch. She wondered what Anna would have thought.